It's government.
It's 19 hours 30 UTC on Monday, December 18th, and this is Zimbabwe Today.
The objectives of the operation have, to a large extent, been achieved.
That was General Philip Valerio Sibanda announcing the end of the military operation that led to the resignation of Zimbabwe President Robert Mugabe after 37 years. We'll have more on that story coming up.
Good evening, I'm Kutsunai Mutetwa.
And I'm Chidonjere on VOA Zimbabwe Today.
The commander of the Zimbabwean Army, General Philip Valerio Sibanda, at a news conference today announced the end of Operation Restore Legacy. The announcement comes 35 days after the military took control of the government, forcing out former President Robert Mugabe.
Operation Restore Legacy was launched on the 13th of November 2017, and its main objective was to remove criminals that had surrounded the former president, resulting in anxiety and despondence amongst our people.
Sibanda thanked the public for its support of the military and called on citizens to be alert for what he called malcontents and saboteurs.
While some of the individuals have been accounted for, others keep the country. This notwithstanding, the objectives of the operation have, to a large extent, been achieved.
The army says Operation Restore Legacy targeted corrupt officials close to Mugabe and his wife, Grace Mugabe. Once Mugabe resigned, the party accepted his former deputy, Emmerson Mnangagwa, as the new president.
Operation Restore Legacy has had wider implications on the political, economic, and social activities of our people. In this regard, a new political dispensation has been ushered in to take Zimbabwe into its rightful place within the SADC and the world at large.
The new government is focused on economic growth and engaging with the international community.
Zimbabweans have been urging the military to leave the streets of Harare since President Emmerson Mnangagwa was sworn in to replace Robert Mugabe on November 24th. So today social media had plenty of reaction to General Sibanda's announcement. Some people were concerned that with soldiers on the watch, police corruption could rebound.
Sebastian Sibanda says, "You mean you caught only three criminals with all the military hardware you displayed?"
Humble J-Man says it might be good news for the army to withdraw into their previous duties, but it is now very risky for traffic police. I don't think the game will be the same. Marcus Lake says, now who will control greedy police?
Simplex says, Operation Restore Legacy ranks among the most important chapters in the history of our country. We say thank you to the ZDF. A new era is beckoning. Zimbabwe will never be the same again. Let's put on our patriotic hats and make Zimbabwe great again.
Neva Maswerase says, this is proof ED is not the dictator that people want to portray him as.
HK Masanda says, as long as normalcy does not mean the return of the Chihuri Mafia masquerading as police officers, littering our highways and avenues.
Zimbabwe's biometric voter registration blitz comes to an end tomorrow despite calls for civic organizations to extend the exercise. Reporter Kudzai Zinawashe has this report.
As of today, Zimbabwe's Electoral Commission has registered over 4.5 million voters. That's 63% of the target of more than 7 million potential voters. Andrew Makoni is the chairman of Zimbabwe Election Support Network.
This number falls far short of the target of 7 million, which REC had set itself to achieve by the 19th of December. We therefore believe that there is need to extend this voter registration process to allow those eligible Zimbabweans who may want to register to vote to do so.
Critics say it is only fair that the registration blitz continue. During the military intervention that saw Robert Mugabe's exit as president of Zimbabwe, the Election Resource Center noted a sharp decrease in voter registration. Critics have been asking if the new president, Emmerson Mnangagwa, will usher in the electoral reforms many people in the country have been calling for. Eddie Cross is a member of parliament for Bulawayo South and a member of Zimbabwe's main opposition, Movement for Democratic Change.
I don't think he's got any choice. I know that the Americans have told him, if you want recognition by the United States, if you want access to international market, money markets, if you want the IMF involved, you want the World Bank involved, if you want any of that, you have to deliver a free and fair election. And my understanding is that he's agreed to do that.
Makoni says they continue to push for reforms.
As the Zimbabwe Election Support Network, we continue to call for electoral reforms that are key to ensuring that Zimbabwe is able to conduct free, fair elections in our country. The piecemeal amendments to the Zimbabwe electoral laws we have seen in the last few months is inadequate.
While many have argued the new administration is a case of old wine in new bottles, Mnangagwa's words at the ruling ZANU-PF Special Congress hint on his commitment to democracy.
Democracy means that as a political party, it must always compete for office. Through pitting itself against opposition parties in elections which must be credible, free, fair, and transparent.
A few weeks ago, the High Court ordered Zimbabwean citizens classified as aliens to be registered to vote. The Movement for Democratic Change estimates about 1 million such people eligible to vote. Voter advocacy groups say that the new rule on alien voters and the fact that thousands of Zimbabweans based outside the country will visit home for the holidays are good reasons to extend the voter registration blitz. For VOA, this is Kudzai Zinawashe from Harare.
Zimbabweans woke up to an increase in the price of bread on Sunday. That raised fear that the price of basic commodities were raised as they did in 2008, when hyperinflation brought about the collapse of the Zimbabwean dollar. The Grain Millers Association of Zimbabwe released a statement saying that the price increase was unwarranted since they had not raised the cost of the flour used to make bread. The price increase received widespread condemnation from the public. The government swiftly called for an emergency meeting with key stakeholders. Mike Bima is the Minister of Industry, Commerce and Enterprise Development.
Saka zvino sehurumende zvataida kuti tinzwisise kuti zvakafamba sei sezvo panga pasina kumbovane nhauri.
He says that the key stakeholders had agreed to revert the price of bread back to 90 cents, but the price might not stay stable. Rosemary Siachitema is the executive director of the Consumer Council of Zimbabwe.
Yabona ukuthama consumers akazathakazelela ukukhulunywayo ngoba ukuthi isinkwa sibe yi $1.
Siachitema says the commissioner counseling reiterated that if the price of bread can be brought down to $1 a loaf, the consumer council will be happy. However, the bread is not the only commodity going through price hikes.
It didn't take long for speculation to begin that China, Zimbabwean's main trade partner, was involved in the recent removal of Robert Mugabe as president of the Southern African nation. The ties between his replacement, Emmerson Mnangagwa, and business people and politicians in China added fuel to the fire. But political analysts who monitor relations between the giant of the Far East and Africa dismiss conspiracy theories that China was a catalyst for political change in Zimbabwe. Darren Taylor reports.
The close relationship between military and party elites in China and Zimbabwe goes back to the 1970s, when Zimbabwean liberation forces fought whites-only rule. Kobus van Staden is a senior foreign policy researcher at the South African Institute of International Affairs.
Several ZANU-PF senior leaders were trained in China, including Emmerson Mnangagwa, the new president.
He says the Mugabe regime's bonds with China grew stronger after the United States instituted financial sanctions in the early 2000s in response to Zimbabwe's human rights violations. Van Staden says the Chinese were very visible in Zimbabwe under Mugabe.
Notably, they built a new parliament building. They heavily invested in some of the extractive industries in Zimbabwe. They are a client of the Zimbabwean agriculture sector, so they buy a lot of tobacco. Retail and other smaller Chinese companies are also involved in Zimbabwe. So the involvement is more complex than it looks, you know, from the outside. It's less simply big companies riding in and taking resources, and it's a more fine-grained engagement.
So Van Staden understands why some see a hidden Chinese hand behind recent events. For one thing, Chinese firms have made the new president and some military commanders wealthy with diamond mining contracts. A visit to Beijing by the army general who led the operation against the Mugabe government, Constantino Chiwenga, also bolstered rumors of Chinese involvement. Chiwenga was in China just days before the army took control of the government.
There is probably a pretty good chance China was probably informed that this is going to happen before. However, that does not mean that China had any kind of active role in making it happen.
Van Staden says China's record in Africa shows it doesn't instigate regime change. He also points out that China is more heavily invested in places that are much more volatile than Zimbabwe, such as South Sudan, but it doesn't interfere there. What the events in Zimbabwe rather reveal, says Van Staden, is China's growing influence on world events.
China is now on a level in Africa where it is informed of these kind of things beforehand. China is now occupying a position in Africa on the same level as the US or the UK. As the West retreats from multilateralism, China is interested in stepping into some of those roles.
Van Staden says the relationship between China and Zimbabwe had become strained in recent years because of Zimbabwe's failure to settle debt. But indications are that this tension is easing under Mnangagwa. For instance, China signed a deal to refurbish the airport in Harare and quickly sent senior envoys. He says Beijing has made clear they want a friendly relationship. And he says there's no difference between China's presence in Zimbabwe and that of other countries.
The Western characterization of China as being these kind of robbers of Africa is very self-serving, especially because many European and American companies are involved in exactly the same sectors in exactly the same way as Chinese competitors.
He says China's record in Africa shows that it adapts to whatever political and economic systems it finds and is unlikely to impose any conditions on Zimbabwe.
I think China is not going to go anywhere. It's going to probably become an even more prominent partner to Zimbabwe.
And so too are other nations, says Van Staden, should the fledgling president keep his promises of reforms. I'm Darren Taylor for VOA News in Johannesburg.
You're listening to Zimbabwe Today, live from Voice of America Studio 22. I'm Chidondere in Washington. At 43 past the hour, we continue with news about Zimbabwe's momentous political change.
South Africa's ruling party has elected a new leader, Cyril Ramaphosa, who will likely be the party's presidential candidate in the next national election. But will Ramaphosa, who was not the outgoing president's pick, be able to overcome the massive challenges ahead for the party? VOA's Anita Powell reports from Johannesburg.
The party's electoral commission announced the results Monday after a tense party conference in Soweto.
Comrade Nkosazana Dlamini-Zuma received 2261 votes, and Comrade Cyril Ramaphosa received 2440 votes.
Ramaphosa, a successful businessman and current deputy president, has promised to bring business-friendly policies to South Africa. But that may not be what pushed him over the top in this tight and tense vote to lead the African National Congress Party. His opponent was Nkosazana Dlamini-Zuma, a former top diplomat and minister, who was also, for 16 years, the wife of the South African president, Jacob Zuma. Zuma is still president. His term as leader of the nation ends in 2019. But Zuma's popularity has sunk lower and lower as he dealt with one corruption scandal after another. Nearly 4,800 ANC delegates participated in the conference in Johannesburg, which was beset by massive delays as the deeply divided party argued behind closed doors about procedural issues. Earlier Monday, a grinning Zuma toured a collection of statues of South African liberation stalwarts, pausing to pay his respects at the bronze images of former President Nelson Mandela and former ANC President Oliver Tambo. He refused to answer journalists' questions, but took a few minutes to address the crush of reporters.
I'm happy to say now, I'm bowing out, very happy, because I think, from my own point of view, I made my contribution.
Many of Zuma's critics, including many high-profile party members, say his contribution to the ANC has been to destroy its image as a party of liberation and equal opportunity. Funde Sonwabo, a delegate from Gauteng province, said he had voted for Dlamini Zuma, but was happy to support the winner. He acknowledged that the ruling party, which he has belonged to, he said, since he was 20, has issues. The ANC has lost ground in recent elections, losing control of three major cities to the opposition.
I think we do have problems, and I'm glad that our leadership is admitting that we do have problems. But then we can't continue moaning and analyzing the problems. We've got to work out strategies of how to get out of the situation in which we are.
The party's outgoing treasurer, General Zweli Mkhize, said party leadership is aware of calls for Zuma to step aside as president now that his term as party leader is over.
We took a discussion, that discussion in the past. When it arises, I think the ANC must deal with it at that point. At the moment, that issue hasn't arisen.
But with Ramaphosa's elevation to head of the powerful party, many ANC watchers predict that issue may arise again. Anita Pal, VOA News, Johannesburg.
The UN Children's Fund is urging countries to do more to ensure the safety and well-being of tens of millions of children on the move. Lisa Schlein reports for VOA from Geneva that UNICEF is issuing its appeal on International Migrants Day.
The UN Children's Fund reports some 50 million children worldwide are on the move. It says many young people are moving safely with their families who are voluntarily migrating in search of a better life. However, for millions of others, it says the move is neither voluntary nor safe. For example, UNICEF notes conflict has forced about 28 million children to flee their homes at great risk to their lives. In many cases, it says refugees have to use the services of smugglers and traffickers in hopes of reaching safety. In this regard, UNICEF spokeswoman Sarah Crowe says 2017 has been a pretty horrendous year.
We've seen some 400 children who have drowned trying to make their way to Europe. We've seen an estimated 32,000 children who are currently in detention in Libya. Of those, 11,000 are unaccompanied. We've seen children, unaccompanied children, crossing mountain passes in the winter. We've seen them stuck on islands.
Crow says children on the move face deportation, drowning, and detention. She says thousands are abused, exploited, and enslaved during their perilous journeys. But she says it does not have to be this way. She says nations should look for safe and legal pathways for migrants, such as granting humanitarian and school visas. She cites other positive measures that can be taken to protect and care for migrant children. These include the promotion of community-based alternatives to detention, opening schools and health centers to migrant children, and ensuring access to justice and housing without fear of deportation. Lisa Schlein for VOA News, Geneva.
Malawi, President Peter Mutharika has declared 20 of the country's 28 districts disaster areas following an invasion by fall armyworms. The pests have destroyed the crops of nearly 140,000 farming families since the start of November. Lamek Masina reports for VOA from Ballantyre.
The government is seeking international help to contain the outbreak, which President Mutharika says is a major threat to the country's food security. Ngeme Galilan is the spokesperson for President Mutharika.
What comes to mind very quickly are chemicals that are required to help farmers protect their fields from the worms. For you to procure the chemicals, you need finances.
In a statement released Sunday, Galilan said the government has just procured about 56,000 liters of pesticides, just one-seventh of the amount needed. He said despite the shortage, the government is already distributing pesticides such as cypermethrin to farmers in some affected areas.
But looking at the extent of the damage that has been caused, government has thought it wise to invite other stakeholders to come in and help, because the thinking is that by itself, it will not be able to contain the situation.
The four armyworms are believed to have been transported from their usual habitat in the U.S. state of Florida or the Caribbean. A USAID expert said recently that the caterpillars have spread to 21 African countries and threatened the continent's main food staple, maize. Four armyworms also hit Zimbabwe and Zambia early this year. In Zambia, the worms destroyed over 124,000 hectares of maize in seven of the country's eight corn-growing provinces. This forced the government to start using military planes to spray pesticides to highly affected areas. However, agriculture experts warn the worms have become resistant to cypermethrin. Researchers in Malawi are experimenting with other pesticides. Scientists at Vumbwe Agriculture Research Station say that so far, about five pesticides have been found to be effective. These include Belt 480SC, Chlorpyrifos 480SC, and Steward. Donald Gajigamba is an entomologist working on the project.
They are eliminating, like in the plots where we have applied these pesticides, found that there are no four armyworms. So it means they are working against this pest.
In the meantime, Minister of Agriculture officials are asking farmers to inform them if they notice strange worms in their fields. Lamek Masina for VOA News, Blanta.
Multinational Joint Task Force Fighting the Boko Haram Insurgency in Cameroon, Chad, and Nigeria says it will hold about 200 former militants until Cameroon can build a center where they will be socially integrated before returning to their communities. The ex-militants are currently at the barracks of the Multinational Joint Task Force in Mora, on Cameroon's northern border with Nigeria. Moki Edwin Kinzeka reports from Mora.
Boko Haram, tu auras de mes nouvelles. Boko a touché mes parents sans me demander.
Soldiers of the Mora camp of the Multinational Joint Task Force fighting Boko Haram sing what is now their regular song after a successful operation. They have just returned from the border with Nigeria with 12 fighters whom they say handed themselves over to the military. Among them is Sule Bupabga, a 22-year-old Nigerian.
My village is Sandawajiri, Kete, the Kirawa, and Ukwepe.
He says his wish is to return to his village at Sandawajiri near Kirawa in Nigeria, and that he regrets all the killings even though they were forced to carry them out. He says what he did was not good. There are nearly 200 former fighters detained in the camp. Some were arrested during fighting and others handed themselves over to the military. Cameroonian ex-fighter, 26-year-old Guma Wamwa, says he decided to report to the military after he escaped from a Boko Haram training camp in the Nigerian border town of Gamburu, but was barred from entering his village in the Cameroon town of Kolofata.
J'étais avec les gardes. Comme ça, les jours que
He says he escaped from a Boko Haram camp with a motorcycle he was given to monitor and report to his former superiors each time a suspected group of people or a strange vehicle was seen approaching. Mijiyawa Bakari, governor of Cameroon's far north region, says the government will continue to protect the ex-fighters. He says they have secured land in the border town of Meme, where all former fighters will be assisted in reintegrating to society. He says the ex-fighters have committed to assist the military in bringing back their peers who are still either hiding in the bush because they are afraid of the military or are still under Boko Haram control. 200 other former Boko Haram fighters are taken care of in the Mozogo Local Council by the governments of Cameroon and UN agencies. Their relatives are not ready to accept them in their villages for fear they may once again be infiltrated by the terrorists. The population says some of them may be spies or have been brainwashed with Boko Haram ideology. Moki, Edwin Kinzuka. For VOA News, Mora, Northern Cameroon.
That is it for us this evening on VOA's Zimbabwe Today. I'm Kutsunai Matatwa.
And I'm Chido Njere. We'll be back again tomorrow at 9:30 p.m. Zimbabwe time for the latest news and analysis in English. VOA Shona and the Bele broadcast can be heard at 7 a.m., 2 p.m., and 7 p.m. Zimbabwe time.
Stay with us around the clock on Facebook at Studio 7, VOA Ndebele, and VOA Shona, as well as our VOA website, www.studio7news.com. Enjoy the music. She football on the air. Don't grab all the kids. She telescope me. Don't go on my play. Don't you dare before.
Satisfying you, only can love, only my love.